And the church said, Amen. What wonderful singing. And I just realized what I had put, Tim put up there. My wife thought that would be funny. She said, tell them every time you go to get on a plane, they pull you out of the line and take you into a back room because I share a name and a birth date with a felon in Florida, and evidently he's not been caught yet. And then I thought about that. You know, that might not be the best recommendation. I want you to know, as I stand before you preaching this, I'm not a criminal. So maybe in this number, maybe I need to make that note. I don't know. My wife thought that was funny, and I guess it is a little bit. I didn't know. I should have taken some notes from Blaine and just made something up about him, or had you hunt him down or something. That would have been a little easier. But it is good to be with you. I appreciate Tim. I've had a relationship with him for a while. He was just up in Kentucky preaching for us, and we greatly appreciate him and appreciate this church and what you all are trying to do. Let's see if I can get this right. It's not going. Whoa, there it went. Thank you. Today we're going to be talking about taking ownership. Now, when I think about lessons, I don't know if you're like this, if you've put together lessons, but a lot of times I start noticing things around me that pertain to that lesson. And when I was thinking about this subject of taking ownership, there were some things that I began to notice. Things like this that we see coming up here on the slide. Some signs that are all around. They're probably in your neighborhood as well as mine. And really, you know what? I'm not in the mood to buy. We've done that. We're in the process of remodeling. I'm not looking to rent or buy. But as this lesson was on my mind, I started realizing there are a lot of places around us that you can rent. There are also some other signs that are very similar. Signs like this, you can buy. And I know that these are not uncommon things. These are not uncommon signs. But I'm just telling you, I didn't really pay attention much about these things because I'm not in the market. But then I started to pay attention how similar that these signs are. Actually, in most cases, they have the similar fonts, similar look to them. We know they're similar in a lot of ways in the sense that they're both dealing with dwelling places. And they also deal with contracts that we can be involved in, right? But there is a lot of difference in the two of these things. There is a lot of difference, and the difference lies, it boils down to the level of commitment that you're going to get involved in, right? The level of commitment. There is a difference between renting and buying. When we think of renting something, it's not something that we are in our minds are thinking of. This is going to be a long-term thing. Most of the time, it's a short-term, don't have to invest as much as I would if I were buying something. But you know that you can rent a lot more than just houses. I know that, and you know that. There's a lot of things we could probably pull up in our own lives. In my own life, I know that you can rent a lot more than houses. When I was at Freed Hardeman University, a guy a couple rooms down in the hall that I was living in, he had these guys bringing in all this stuff, and I thought, man, look, there's a brand new couch, a brand new entertainment system, brand new TV, VCR, DVD combo at that time, entertainment system. I mean, he had everything. I thought, I was kind of shocked. I was even more shocked when the rental place that he rented it from showed up 2 months later and repoed it all. it wasn't his, and he hadn't paid for it. He hadn't kept paying for it. They took it back. This summer, my family and I went down to Florida and visited Mickey Mouse. And so that's why I'm poor right now. And so we'll pass the hat a little bit later. But anyway, we were getting ready to go and getting all the preparations for this trip. And I just knew the van that we have is our family vehicle. I don't trust it. I do not trust it to make that trip. I figured I'd get halfway and I'd have to be doing something. So I went down to Enterprise in Pikeville, Kentucky. And I said, listen, I need to rent a vehicle. And they gave me the vehicle I wanted. They handed me the keys. It was even full of gas when I left the place. I went down there. We had a great week, came back, and I handed those keys right back, and I had no more obligation. I had no more responsibility. You know what? I didn't even wash the car. I didn't have to, and I bet you wouldn't either, right? Because there's a difference between renting and buying. You can rent all kinds of things. You can rent houses. You can rent cars. Have you ever seen this? You're going to have to help me there. You ever rented? Oh, we call it buying, right? We call it buying season tickets, and I had to throw up some orange there because I'm in Tennessee. And you know, you we call it buying season tickets, but guess what? You don't really own those seats. You're renting them. Because at the end of the season, they don't unbolt that seat and hand it to you and let you go home. And if you don't agree to rent it for the next year, it's going to be in somebody else's possession. It's renting. And we know that you can rent all kinds of things. In my neck of the woods, you can rent these kind of seats. Whoa, back one more. You can rent those kind of seats. We're in Kentucky. They're blue everywhere. I had to put that up because I brought one of my elders with me and Tim. I knew it would be applicable to him. You can rent these kinds of seats. And I don't have much involved in that. The seats that I'm involved, they have Urban Meyer's picture on it. Those are the kind of seats that I want to buy. My point is this. There's a difference between renting and buying. You can rent a house. You can rent a car. You can rent a seat. Next slide. God forbid that we ever have the attitude or the presumption to think that we can rent these seats. See, Christianity is not about rentership. Christianity is about ownership. And we have to understand that. We have to understand there has to be buy-in on our part, and all the lessons that we've heard today. And I was real worried. I thought, man, we're going to be treading over everybody else's material, but it's amazing how seamlessly this goes together and how it builds, because everybody's been talking about that. Get in the game. Get off the sidelines. What they're saying is you've got to buy into what God is calling us to do. And so we talk about this idea. There has to be ownership. We have to take ownership. We have to own it, someone would say. And so when we hear these lessons about get in the game, get off the bench, it means more than just saying, hey, I've got my season pass, and that's my seat, and hey, don't anybody sit in my seat. And sometimes I'm busy, and I'm not going to show up and fill that pew. Maybe I'll allow somebody else to sit there while it's not being, while I'm not using it. But Christianity is more than that. And you are here because you know, and I know, that Christianity is more than that. But the vast majority of people who call themselves Christian in our culture, in our day and time, this is the mentality they have, isn't it? I'm a season ticket holder. But you know what? We don't really, that's not buying anything. You're renting those seats. And we need to understand and we need to know that Christianity is more about ownership, not rental. We're not in the rental service or the rental business. Can you hit the next slide for me? When we think about this, I need to put out a disclaimer. I'm going to get up here and say, we need to take ownership for our faith. We need to take ownership in the church. We need to take ownership. I need you to know that I know that God ultimately is the one in charge. That ownership ultimately belongs to God. And when I say we need to take ownership, I am not advocating in any way saying that we should usurp God's authority, because He has all authority and I need to submit to Him. It is not about usurping His authority. It is about submitting to His authority, but not halfway, not sometime, but submitting to Him completely. That's what I'm getting at in this lesson. See, I believe what Jesus talked about when Peter made that great confession there in Caesarea Philippi, when Jesus was asking the question, who do men say that I am? They came up with a lot of answers to what people were saying, but Jesus said, no, you've been with me. Who do you say that I am? Peter said, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, upon that rock, that confession of faith, I will build my church. He didn't say, I'll build your church or I'll build somebody else's church. He says, it's mine. It's my church. That's why we read about Paul writing to the churches at Ephesus and Colossae and many other places where he's stressing the headship of Christ, where he would tell them in Ephesians 1, verse 22, Ephesians 5, 23, Colossians 1, 18, that Christ is the head of the church. I need to understand that, right? I need to know that He is in charge. He's head of the church. But church is a word people also don't understand, right? People do not get it. They think this is the church, right? They think this building that's made of brick and stone and steel, that's the church. I'm going to church. No, you are the church. And I think that's a misconception that people have in our culture, what church is. And if we really understood that, yes, Jesus is the owner of the church, that Jesus is the builder of the church, that he's the head of the church, but I'm the church, that means he's the head of me, he's the owner of me. And we would start to see that, wait a minute, that excludes any kind of rental possibility. I don't have a rental agreement with God. I have to give him the deed and the title. It's about ownership. See, I remember what Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 2, and what a great chapter where he breaks down our responsibility, where he talks about who we are. We're a holy priesthood, a holy people, a special people, a holy nation. We are a spiritual house. The church is a spiritual house made up of living stones, and that is what we are. We need to understand that the church belongs to God and that I am his. Paul would say, you are bought with a price. So we're not to be renters, just filling a pew that we reserve weekly with our season passes. Let me give you a couple things in the 5 minutes that I've got here. A couple things what it means to take ownership. The first is, in the next slide, you got to have skin in the game. You got to have skin in the game. It was last year. It was during bowl season. I don't get to go up to Ohio during bowl season very often. And we were watching a game. It was like 11 o'clock at night. We were shouting. We were hollering. My wife comes in. She says, who's playing? And I told her who it was. It was like Utah and somebody. I didn't care. We were just watching good football. She said, who are you rooting for? I don't care. I'm just watching good football, which is a concept my wife does not get. You know, but I told her, I said, I don't have any skin in this game. Buckeyes aren't playing. My team's not playing. I don't have any skin in the game. What I meant by that is I had no investment in those teams. I had put no time in of knowing who the players were or looking at what person wore what number or what person was playing in what position. I had no expectation. If they lost or won, it didn't matter. I just wanted to see good football. I was indifferent. Whoever lost, it wasn't going to affect me in any way, right? You ever watch a game like that? Just want to watch a good game. I was indifferent. But you know, some people have that in regard to the church. They come, they show up, they fill their season pass. They sit in their pew. They just want a good game. They want the preacher to get up, say a few things that are good. They want to feel good, and then they want to go along their way. And what we would call that is they are indifferent. If there are problems in the church, it doesn't bother them. If the church is growing, it doesn't bother them. If the church is suffering, it doesn't bother them. They're indifferent because they have no investment, no skin in the game. Skin in the game is a phrase that applies to various areas of life, whether we're talking in business and investing, whether we're talking about Christianity. I need to have a personal stake and investment in the church. The Bible demands that I do. Because what happens if I don't have a personal investment in something? I waste it. You go to Luke chapter 15 and you'll hear about the prodigal son, that wonderful parable that Jesus tells. And it talks about this man who goes up and this young man who goes up to his father and he basically says, Dad, I wish you were dead. I want what's mine, what's coming to me when you're gone. He's the younger son, so he gets a third of what the father has. And he goes, and what does he do with that money? He invests it wisely. No. He wasted it. You know why he wasted it? First of all, because that's what sin does. Sin will take you for everything you got. It will take you farther than you thought it would take you and farther than you ever wanted to go. But I'm convinced that he wasted what his father spent a lifetime amassing because he had no skin in the game. He didn't earn that money and it didn't mean as much to him. The church will never mean anything to us until we understand we are the church. And that we are involved and have to get involved in the work of the church. We have to invest skin in the game. Now we think about this. No, time is short today. See, at home I can just keep preaching. They don't stop us. What do you think about someone who invested wisely? I'll tell you who I think of, the Macedonians. Remember what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 5 as he's talking about their amazing giving. He said, not only as we hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. What does God want from me? Mark chapter 12. What's the first and greatest command? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. God wants us to invest ourselves. He wants us to be fully invested. What's that mean? Someone asked. What does it mean to invest in God? One preacher said it means we invest our time, our talent, and our treasure. We need to be like the Macedonians and be willing to put our skin in the game. We need to do what Jesus said when he was encouraging us to love the way the Lord calls us to love. To love him with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. And we need to realize we have to take ownership because God's not in the rental business. We need to know that involves a personal responsibility. It means I have to take initiative. It means I have to give him my all, always. Thank you.